Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. Our guest is Larry Amick Smallwood, who grew up in Ajamoog, the Lake Lena district of Mille Lacs. He has worked as a language instructor for the Minneapolis Public Schools, Neosing School, the Leech Lake Tribal College, and the University of Minnesota Duluth. Since 1999, he has served as the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. One of the things I want to ask you about today is it's wintertime out, and I was going to ask about how Anishinaabe people think about snow and playing in the snow.
I was told things when I was young, when I was playing out in the snow. You know, everything is, we have to respect everything. One of the things I was told is not to kind of make fun of the snow. Don't build snowmen. Things like that, because there is a Manadu, Gabibunike, is what they call him, the spirit of the snow. Everything to us is spiritual, the one who brings the snow, Gabibunike. And even the rains, Benesug, Bidunawa, Nibi, even the thunderbirds that we believe in. So everything is spiritual. So by us making, I tried that a couple of times and I got scolded for it, you know, and tried to build a snowman and stuff like that. And then, you know, don't do that. They never told us why, really, till we got a little bit bigger. And the same thing, too, some kids are over one day and they're making snow angels, or whatever they were called. And that old lady hollered at me and said, "Hey, Gego Gate, Chigekedeo, don't you be doing that." Oh, how could I? Oh, okay. I never did say why, you know. But later on, they told me when I got into my curious years before I started teaching or just about the time I started teaching.
Because that's the thing I think today is people want to know that kind of stuff. You know, they're like, why should we do that? Or, you know.
Right. You know, a long time ago when the elders told us, we never said why, you know. So why not? You know, it's just one of our teachings. Okay. And then you go back to that, someday you'll know. You know, as for me, someday didn't come soon enough, so I went out and got really, asked a lot of questions, a lot of people. Because for me, it goes way back from the time I first heard these ministers and preachers and that. And then, you know, after the experience I had with my mom telling me we have a different way. So that's when I started getting curious and asking these questions, you know, why do we do this, why don't we do this, and all that. So that's one of the reasons why we don't make snowmen or make snow angels, because who brings the winter.
So meaning that it's something where if people do it, then we'll have, like, more snow, or... I guess I want more about the why.
Yeah, right. Well,
and I asked too, because, you know, we have a lot of young parents in Ojibwe country, right. And, you know, maybe they don't know, and they need to, you know, explain to their kids. So.
Right. Well, see, I was growing up in a time that, in the era where you didn't ask why, you know. Well, I know something, you wait till later, then ask why, and then maybe they'll explain it to you once they thought you were old enough, you know. They'll explain it to you, and that's the only thing they told me. You're making fun of the... One of the Manadus, one of the spirits there. So I just never did. I told some of my kids when they were growing up, don't do that. Why? We just don't. So.
I wanted to ask you, too, a little bit about end-of-life rites for Ojibwe people. And, you know, what's our belief about, you know, we have all these modern things in our communities and the outside culture is changing and their attitudes about funerals and end-of-life type stuff. We have things like cremation, and what are we told about that from our teachings about cremation?
Well, we believe there is no end-of-life, actually. You know, the body that houses our spirit is what gets tired and worn out and old, and that, you know, eventually it gives up, but we still live on. We have our spirit. So there is no end of life. If you go to a traditional funeral And if you listen to what the person that's conducting the funeral has to say, you'll get a good understanding. You'll know why. Because a funeral is not, and I think other cultures think that way too, but a funeral is not a end of life, but it's a beginning of a life, a beginning of a new life. Because in our culture, we send the spirit, we talk to the spirit and tell him he must go back to the spirit world. Mm-hmm. And we talk to that individual in our language and tell him the necessary steps that he or she must take to get to the spirit world. And then, and that is very important, because once you get to the spirit world, there's no coming back. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, we all go up there sometime or other. So it's the beginning of a new life for them. It is called land of everlasting happiness. Mm-hmm. It's not called a happy hunting grounds. that's something else there. But land of everlasting happiness is the best way we can translate it. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the funeral story, the journey that the individual has to take, the steps he has to take, it is very comforting mm-hmm. to the family that lost this person. Mm-hmm. Very comforting. They get a good understanding of what's going on and what this spirit's going to be doing. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. I used to listen to these elderly men when I was young, when they used to do the funerals. And, you know, by the time I was probably 16 years old, 17, before I left home, I pretty much knew the story of how it went. So that was fine and dandy. Of course, I moved out and I went to the cities and all over the military and out in the West Coast and living, traveling here and there. And then when I came back to Minnesota, I started teaching a course, and on me teaching, I got, you know, I said I was curious, you know, so I wanted mm-hmm. to know these things that I was teaching about. So I learned these things, and probably in the late 90s, probably around 99, really late 90s, my uncle called me up one day, and I was living over in Leech Lake, and he says, "Ndaga pigiwin, ndaya kuzimin gusha. Get up, not a moa, oh, my dry weed. Oh, then he called me up and he asked me, you think you should come home now? We're getting tired here and too tired to do these things. He says, there's a man here that's doing them now and he needs some help. And get up, not a moa, no, could you come and assist him? So I thought about it and I finally agreed and came back to Mille Lacs, and I sat with the Tawasingiridamah Lee Staples for a few years, and then listening to him, and got the story down and how he does things. You know, midday funerals are a little different, you know, but I'm learning that too. I've done one or two of those midday funerals. Mm-hmm. But so now Lee does them, I do them, and Melvin Eagle does them over in Mille Lacs, and Skip Churchill does them, so there's a handful that still do the traditional funerals. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, if the family comes to you and says, well, or even people before they pass on, if they're older or sick, I mean, if they say we want to be cremated, what are our teachings about that? Is that taboo, or?
Nobody has ever come up to me or to Lee either and said, I want to be cremated. You know? You're still talking to me. How do you want to be cremated, you know? But it's the families after this individual passes away. Yeah. We want to cremate old dad here. We want to cremate old mama here. Well, we look at it as just getting by with a cheap funeral.
Uh-huh.
Sorry to sound so blunt, but that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to pay for the casket. They don't have to do this. Yeah. So they just want to cremate them and get it over with. That's the way we look at it. And that's not our way.
Right.
Cremation. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. A long time ago, even before caskets and before any of this modern stuff come around, they used to bury the people, and sometimes they and wrapped in birch bark. And I've seen that, too, just as recent as 10 years ago. and where they wrapped an individual in birch bark and buried her.
Can we still do that? I mean, is that, like United States government type, did they allow that or?
Well, they did.
Oh, okay. And or local ordinances or whatever.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, you know, there's always rules for something, you know. Yeah. And we have our cultural laws too and our cultural rules too.
Yeah.
You know, but they've done it with birch bark and things like that, you know. But cremation was not one of our ways. It's right. Just a way to do a cheap funeral so that kids don't have to pay for the funeral. Mm-hmm. That's the way we look at it.
Yeah. I mean, is there any teachings too about that why it's not a good idea?
I've never actually heard any teachings about that. I just the comments I've heard from some elders, you know, that they shouldn't do that.
Right. I mean, is there something too about disrupting like your journey to the other side if you do that? Or
well, your spirit lives on. So what happens to your shell, you know, it's something else. I guess just to respect for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, you know, there's people that do funeral ceremonies, and each one's a little different,
mm-hmm.
Depending on what community you're from. But like I say, we're in Mille Lacs, and the three districts there haven't changed anything in forever. Mm-hmm. It's always been the same. The story, the directions given to the spirit mm-hmm. is the same. You know, the telling the spirit about the journey he or she has to take, that's the same. But there are different ways of doing things, you know. We have a lot of rules, do's and don'ts during our funeral ceremonies too, you know. Expectant women are not allowed to view the body, you know, because something else here. And wearing glasses when you view the body, you know, that's forbidden because the spirit still there and causes a glare. And he or she can see himself or herself.
So there's something I always wanted to ask about that seems kind of cheesy. So it's going to be a cheesy question. Are contacts okay about that? Or
I don't know.
I told you it was a cheesy question, but, you know, I always think.
Maybe people do wear contacts over there. I don't know. I can't tell you to take your contacts off, you know. They're inside of you anyhow, mm-hmm. you know. But to go over to a big pair of glasses like I'm wearing over here, that's a no-no.
Yep.
And then also food is very important, you know. Mm-hmm. And our funerals are different. Like I said, we talk to the spirit and give their directions, their steps that they have to take to get to the spirit world. There's no other way around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other funerals, they don't do that. Our way hasn't changed, and it's the only way because they don't talk to the spirits in the other type of service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have these spirits that wander. I mean, you might see somebody passed away and you didn't have a traditional burial.
Mm-hmm.
You might, what they call amanis. You might see him walking on a road or something. You might see him in your house or you might see him outside or wherever they have these moments, you know, where they see somebody. Or, you know, and that's probably the spirit that didn't get sent off right and didn't get sent to where you're supposed to go because he wasn't given the directions in Ojibwe.
Huh. It's kind of scary, actually.
It is. It's kind of creepy. It is. You know, there's a lot of things happening out there, you know, and, you know, I could give you examples, but we're not going to do that, of people that have seen somebody that passed away, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, they weren't sent off the right way, you know.
Hmm. This is Ojibwe Stories, Garanunanada, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Larry Amick Smallwood, a language instructor at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He is also the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and is a contributing voice to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary, an online resource created by the University of Minnesota. In your kind of role in funerals, you don't just go to Mille Lacs, you go to different communities, right? Like, where were some of the furthest you traveled?
I believe I've gone to Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, and Lee Staples has gone down into the deep south of Georgia or somewhere, Kentucky, somewhere down that way.
Hmm.
And
there's still natives down there?
Yes. There are natives down there. What happened here is one of our Mille Lacs band members lived down that way, you know. But then I've done some in Michigan, too. They're a little less fortunate than we are because they don't have any person over there that can do this.
Right.
because it wasn't handed down or passed down to them. So they get a person from over here, and they get a person up there, and they get a person down that way, and pretty soon they're all mixed up. There's no consistency to how they do things. And like I said earlier, we here in Mille Lacs are fortunate, and we haven't changed anything for 100 and some years. We're very fortunate down here. And right now, Lee Staples is working with a few individuals on teaching them the way to do these things, conduct these things. And
Is that how we kind of get these things? And this isn't just limited to funerals. I guess it could be any kind of ceremonies and teachings and whatnot. That because, you know, we see, and, you know, like you mentioned, Mille Lacs is pretty fortunate that, you know, you guys still have a generation there that, where there's a group of people that still do those things as opposed to maybe other places. But is there kind of an effort, you know, as we, you know, we talk about language revitalization, but bringing back our ceremonies too, you know, and again, with the geography as well, that's important too, to have, you know, to bring back to where it isn't just Mille Lacs or Red Lake where these things are happening, but where there's people that people can go to anywhere to do these type things.
Well, I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, like, I know Red Lake has their way of two of them, Panama, you know, they're doing their things, they're traditional people. They have their spiritual leaders and advisors and people, and so does Net Lake, and they have some in Leech Lake. But I'm just saying, farther away, you know, they weren't as fortunate as we are. And so we're fortunate up here as Minnesota and northern Wisconsin Ojibwe's, you know, to still have some people that can do these things.
So what's your advice too about if a family comes to you about things like organ donation? What's the Ojibwe view about that, or the ceremonial view?
That's another one. We don't believe in that. People do, and I just can't see it myself. You know, they always ask me that. They asked me that when I got my driver's license, took my test over there. You know, donate? No, I want all my organs. I'm going to go whole if I can. Minus some teeth, maybe. Or a finger or something, but yeah. I'm going to go as whole as I can be. They don't ask us that too much. So.
But like you say, though, I mean, that's kind of in the modern world we live in. That's something they hit you with, like, right away at the DOT.
Say,
and make you feel almost like, you know, you're less of a person if you don't get on the bandwagon. But
right,
so
I don't think anybody want my organs anyway. But no, we have pretty strict rules and beliefs about cremation and about donating organs and all these kinds of things. I want to keep everything as it is, pretty much. So, and you're talking about funerals too. Funerals will take 2 days. You know, you have the wake one night, and then you have the funeral the next day. And some places, I don't understand it, but they have a wake for 4 nights. I mean, you know, that's a long time for somebody to be, you know, laying around someplace. You know, be shifted here and there. It's people to observe. You know, so we just have the wake one night and a feast. You know, and eat with that spirit, so to speak, and the next day, again, before we send him on his journey, we eat with him because, you know, before you go on a journey, you like to eat. So we treat that individual good. We have feast him or her, and then we feast together, and then we send him on his journey. Yeah, it's not an easy thing to be doing a funeral. You know, when you stand up there and you do this, and you might, that might be a close friend of yours, a distant relative, and then you can feel everybody's pain when they go through there. And view, you take all that in, and it gets you tired after you do that. And I never understood how Lee could say he got just tired after he did that until I started doing it myself. And I said, holy man, I'm tired, I'm drained. You know, I think it's so important for you. You're responsible to get that spirit to the spirit world. You know, and all your concentration and everything, man, is directed on what you're doing. And that's what drains you.
So is this like another, you know, I think we talked a few shows back about the reason we need to speak Ojibwe. Is this another good example of why people need to know Ojibwe?
That is a good example of why you need to know Ojibwe. And, you know, like I said before, you know, to do these ceremonies, you have to speak Ojibwe. You know, some people, they learn a little Ojibwe, and they mispronounce words. And, man, if you're doing a ceremony, you better pronounce that word exactly how it's supposed to be said, because, you know, mispronounce a word, and it's going to mean something totally different. So when you're responsible for something like giving a name or doing a funeral, man, that's on you. Huh. It'll come back on you. So,
or even that verb forms, right?
Right.
I mean, if you mix up, like, the persons you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm so leery about different so-called spiritual leaders or healers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to know what you're saying.
Hmm.
You know? But that's me, though.
Yep.
You know?
This is Ojibwe Stories, Garanunanada, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Larry Amick Smallwood, a language instructor at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He is also the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and is a contributing voice to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary, an online resource created by the University of Minnesota. So I wanted to ask you about teaching that I heard about that kind of relates to this topic. Has to do with fingernails. And like burning your fingernails after you clip them. Is that something that that you've heard of? Or
I've heard of that, although not down my way or our way here. Mm-hmm. I think further up north they save their hair,
mm-hmm.
their nails, or their, if they have to get one of their limbs cut off, I heard they save those, you know.
Yep.
But not our way, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, not our way down here. It might be mm-hmm. somebody else's way up north, which is fine and dandy.
Yep.
You know, we didn't have that teaching down here.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard of that up north.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like I said, you know, each community or each different location is a little bit different. So I don't know everything. I don't know. Gongi ga in kinige go nini ke kenda zin. Tukubangi kenda mana maya zimina magiyan. You know, you were talking about families, what they do, do's and don'ts. You know, after the funeral, you know, there's some things that the family has to do. And one of the things that they have to do is refrain from any alcohols or whatever mood-altering chemicals, so to speak. You know, refrain from that, because after you lose somebody, you can get into a habit of doing that.
Right.
If you do it, and you'll get worse at it.
Mm-hmm.
However, they do tell our people to live life to the fullest after you've lost somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Hold your head up, be proud, and we do not cut our hair. We do not cut our hair. Mm-hmm. We do not quit dancing for a year. We do not quit singing for a year. Mm-hmm. We do not do those. We continue singing and dancing.
What about like harvesting rice and stuff, or is that a different
thing? And that's another thing there. After you've lost somebody, you cannot go out and pick fresh vegetation after the person has died. Anything, you know, like fish, wild rice, berries, deer meat,
mm-hmm.
Any of those things that we take, somebody has to get it for you and prepare it and then feed you.
Right.
That's what we have to do. I just did a ceremony like that yesterday mm-hmm. for a friend of mine. He lost his son back here in September and gave me some tobacco and told me to come over because he hadn't been fed, and somebody got him fish and somebody got him deer meat. So I went over and did that ceremony for him. Now he's okay to go out and hunt and fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, you got to do this again when the berries come out. You got to do this.
So you got to do it for each thing you're going to do.
Well, yeah, the berries, the rice, and the meat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Kind of staple foods.
Right.
Huh. So, but otherwise, though, aside from, you know, harvesting stuff, the other stuff you are supposed to do.
Right.
Get out there. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And don't shave your head, right?
Is that no, please, no.
We don't want to see what's under there.
Now. Right. Yeah, you know, my dad's name was Pete Nicoboyne, and he had a brother named George Nicoboyne and a brother named Frank Nicoboyne. And Frank and George used to always dance together. They were old-time grass dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, George, you know, passed away. So Frank quit dancing. for a long time. And then one day my dad and I were over in Mille Lacs at the trading post, and they were having a powwow there. And he saw his brother Frank dancing over there. My dad got really happy. He said, "Oh, well, he's dancing over there." So after a bit there, he got a chance to talk to his brother. "I see you're dancing again," he said. I'm glad you're dancing." And Frank told him, "Well, our brother George," he said, "I dreamt about him. He was not happy because I wasn't dancing." And he must have told him, "You know, we used to dance together. Mm-hmm. Why don't you dance?" So that's why he started dancing again. Yeah. So you know what? They send little messages.
Yeah.
You know, you get these little dreams or little messages, you know, do things. So, yeah, we keep on dancing, we keep on singing. You know, it might be hard at first, but also, too, at our ceremonial drums, we have washing away the tears ceremonies. Mm-hmm. You know, after so long, when somebody's lost somebody, you know, they'll do a ceremony for that person. Okay, you've grieved enough. You know, we'll make you dance here now and enjoy life, you know. Mm-hmm. So they gift them and make them dance, and they can continue on.
Mm-hmm. And how close with the going out and not, you know, ricing, hunting and whatnot? Is it up to the person to decide, like, how close they were to this person that they don't want to do that, or?
Immediate family.
Yeah.
And you know, like, brothers, sisters, cousins, nephews, grandkids, stuff like that, uncles, aunts. So, and then outside of that, then fine, you know.
Yeah.
So.
The other thing I want to ask you about, too, before we get out of here, is suicide. Like, what's the kind of traditional thought about that?
It's a sickness. Your state of mind. Mm-hmm. Your individual is sick. His mind is not working right. That's why they do that. You know, people that used to commit suicide, they said they couldn't send them anywhere because they'd be stuck somewhere. But you know, if he does that on account of illness, we treat it like he was sick and passed away from sickness.
Huh.
So that's what we do.
So they're not stuck in that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Larry Amick Smallwood, for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada, visit the KUMD website at kumd.org and click on Audio Archives. Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunidada is produced by KUMD and the Department of American Indian Studies at UMD, with funding provided in part by a strategic initiative grant from the Chancellor's Office of UMD, by Enege Kendaso Young, the Center for Indigenous Knowledge and Language Revitalization at UMD, and by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.